Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Monday, August 8th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? That chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual process, worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet and an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through the worksheet process. And repeated listening to those is a wonderful substitute for having a live session with somebody either on the radio or in one of our support groups, and can help you move toward mastery. In this work, we have the definition for a master is someone who is always a perpetually avid student. So you can move into learning more and more about this every day in every way by listening to those audio files and doing your own worksheets. We hope people do that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives, and secondarily because it frequently leads to comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, you can call us directly at 563-999-3581 and press 1. Or you can email tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if you email us with a comment or a question or testimonial, and then we discuss it on the internet show. We can send you the show date and time, and you can listen to it in the archives if you're not able to listen live. So we're hopeful that what we're doing is of service, and it makes it much easier for us to get clear about the fact that we are being of service when people call and give us feedback or ask a question. So please feel free to do that, even if we're in the middle of a reading, as in the way of mastery, or a monologue. I'll either turn your microphone on right away and introduce you by area code, or when it seems to be the best for the flow of the show. We're working with the Way of Mastery. We've been doing that since January 10th. And we're talking about all the various ways that we can wake up to how we are creating our experience of life. We aren't necessarily creating all of the outside events in our lives, and yet whatever happens in what we call the outside world, and at one level we know we're all connected, and at another level of scale, there are differences. And so in that level of scale where I perceive myself as separate from the world around me, I understand I don't cause the rain. I don't cause the traffic jam. I don't cause somebody running a stop light or stop sign and hitting my car. And yet, in the same moment that I understand I don't cause all of those external things, I can understand that I'm the one who chooses to value certain thoughts and interpretations of those things, and that's the mechanism that creates my experience of life. And that begins in the first chapter, as an observation, as the primary, the original axiom of this work, which is found on the fifth page of the Way of Mastery, where it says, nothing that you experience is created by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. And then all the way through the 17th lesson, where it says, We're hoping that you're working towards 100% responsibility for every experience you create. And we're suggesting that you learn to turn inward, that when you assume complete responsibility and power for what you're creating and you turn inward and choose to spend more and more of your energy focusing on what you're doing with your thoughts and what you're doing with the thoughts that you value, and a lot less energy focused on the outside world, and no energy whatsoever focused on blaming yourself or somebody else for what you're experiencing. That's when you start opening the doors, throw them wide open. And in the 18th lesson, it's suggesting that your one function is to bless creation. Your one function is to be in the flow of life in that open, accepting, allowing, surrendering position. And to back up and read one of the sections that we read on Friday, it says, your one function is to bless creation. And the text reads, the function of the holy child of creation remains eternally one. To bless creation and thereby restore it to the perfect reflection of God's creation's presence in life, in the moment, in the flow of energy that we call life, creation, love, etc., light. And creation is just that energy that we call love. Love embraces all things and trusts all things. Love allows all things and thereby transcends all things. Love is the nature of your being. When you finally choose to awaken completely by welcoming love back into your mind and by becoming committed to resting only in loving thoughts, then you will discover that illusions are just that, and they contain no existence. You have been resting in the holy mind of creation eternally. Creation then waits on your welcome. Creation waits for you to embrace it. Creation waits upon you, the holy anointed child of creation, sent as that one who is the Savior of all things. You are then the Messiah. You are then Christ incarnate. To the degree that you become crazy enough in the eyes of your world to simply assume the truth, capital T truth, and become completely committed to listening to no other voice. For there is given to you one teacher that I have called the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, the voice for creation placed within your mind in the very moment that you first dared to dream the thought of separation, of guilt. And guilt is the mother of fear. Guilt is the mother of fear because guilt is the thought that, oh, I did something wrong when I decided to pretend that I could experience myself as separate from myself or separate from my creator. The text goes on and says, beloved friends, take a moment and just for the fun of it, practice making a simple decision. This takes no effort since you make decisions all day anyway. You're already a master at making decisions. And this is a simple decision. Observe the place where you are now. If you're alone or seem to be alone through the physical eyes, look at the so-called objects around you. Feel the temperature of the air. Hear the sounds that come in through the ears. If you are with others, include your brothers and sisters in this observation. Then decide to look upon all these things with perfect innocence. And then say within your mind, which is to use the power of the mind to literally create perception. Simply say, as you look at each object or person, quote, I do not know what this is for. I do not know what my brother or sister needs. Close quotes. And then realize it is not necessary to know. It is not necessary to interpret and to analyze. Your function is to bless creation with the reality of the love of Christ. Yet that blessing will hold no power until you return to the beginning. The beginning is just that state of unknowing, of not knowing, of realizing your complete ignorance. For Christ does not store perceptions and knowledge. Christ, eternally in the flow of creation that we call love, in that flow of love and creation, is merely open, it receives, and it gives. It's part of the flow, knowing that that which is given comes not from him or herself, but rather through him or herself, from infinite mystery that I have called Abba or Father. When you decide to fully accept the one purpose given to you, in reality, there will be nothing that will block your way. Every step you will take, literally, will take you through obstacles that dissolve as you approach them. For because you abide in the mind of creation, you know no limitation. The realm of illusion, what appears to be solid matter of people with different opinions, this holds no power to prevent you from bringing forth the blessing that heals all illusion. Creation, then, waits on your welcome. That requires that you choose to look upon all things in the world and of the world and forgive it. What does forgive mean? In this work, it means to dismantle any negative perception you have about it. Why? Because till forgiveness or the dissolution of false negative perceptions is genuine, you can't embrace life, the flow of life, love, creation, what is around you. The attempt to embrace creation while judgment is still present merely brings great frustration. It's like reaching for the carrot at the end of the stick and never being able to reach it. I cannot embrace creation and judge it at the same time. It's an impossible thing to judge something and embrace it at the same time. The text goes on and says, that is why we've spoken so much about the importance of forgiveness. Forgiveness dissolves the barrier of fear between you and what you've come to perceive as other than or as outside of yourself. What that means is we get to dissolve the false perception that tells me the lie that I'm separate from everyone and everything around me. I get to step into the kind of experience and deep knowing that Einstein talked about when he said, experiencing yourself as separate from someone or something is an optical delusion. It's an optical delusion which creates a special affection for people and things closest to me, and that creates a prison for me. And the only way out of that prison is to extend that special affection to everyone and all of creation. When I do that, I move closer to perceiving life, this flow of life and energy, as it actually is, what Michael Rice would call the spiritual faculty of true perception. What the Way of Mastery talks about is the shimmering radiance of the creative energy that underlies everything and everyone you ever interact with. To perceive accurately, to have successfully dismantled every false perception, every negative perception, that's how I know it's false. That's the process that in this work they're calling forgiveness. When I can complete the process of removing the false perceptions from my mind, then I can embrace life as it is. Paragraph again reads, that is why we've spoken so much about the importance of forgiveness. Forgiveness dissolves the barrier of fear between you and what you've come to perceive as other than or outside of yourself. Forgiveness is the bridge that connects creation to you and you to it. And when you have joined with it through this forgiveness process of dismantling false perceptions, now the embrace is easy. For then, creation rests in the palm of your hand. Creation waits upon you because it is powerless. Creation is just the extension or the reflection of thought. You are the literal creator of the world in that way. The world exists, the world that you experience, doesn't exist anywhere but in your mind. We've talked about this over and over and over again. People watch an event and get 17 different impressions of what happened. The world that you perceive exists nowhere save in your own mind. The text goes on and says, therefore, what world must you embrace? Must you travel to some ancient monastery 50,000 miles around the planet somewhere and go two or three times in order to find the creation that awaits on your welcome? No. Must you go anywhere to discover the ability to bless and heal creation? No. The world that awaits on your welcome is quite literally the thoughts and perceptions that you discover streaming through the field of your unique awareness, and that is all. Beloved friends, there is nothing outside of you. Would you know the creation's will for you? If you would, merely look upon what is arising within your own mind as a perception and ask only this following question. Quote, am I willing now in this moment to use time constructively to embrace this creation passing through the field of my awareness and bless it with the perfect love of Christ? First, embrace it through forgiveness, which means you're dismantling the false perceptions you have about it, which returns it to its neutrality and powerlessness, and then through that embrace, bless it and thereby dissolve the illusory power that it seemed to hold. As long as I'm in judgment about something and that judgment is negative, I am not in embracing of it. I am not in surrender to it. I am not in allowance. I am not in a space where I can perceive the shimmering radiance behind the perception I'm creating. Forgiveness is the way to dismantle the false perceptions, and I know they're false anytime they contain judgment and negativity, or they generate a negative emotional response within me. And when I do that, dismantle the perceptual process within me that leads me to judgment and conclusion, and what I do is I restore life, I restore the flow of life, creation, to its neutrality and powerlessness, and then I can embrace it and bless it and thereby dissolve the illusory power that the perception used to hold. The next chapter or segment heading is cultivating the practice of blessing the world. And the text reads, as you choose to truly practice being the presence of Christ, as you cultivate the practice of blessing the world, you will discover a very interesting thing. You will swear that many of the thoughts or what seem to be experiences or emotions that are passing through your screen of awareness do not seem to have any causal link to anything you have ever experienced in your current lifetime. For those of you who have done the inner work necessary to create a transparency of the barrier between lifetimes, you will not even necessarily find a causal link between the world, the creation that's passing through the field of your awareness, and anything you have ever experienced as a unique ray of light. In other words, you won't even be able to find somebody who does a past life regression on you and find that in a past life or 17 lives ago, that's when you first had this thought. The text asks the question, why is this important? Simply because the human mind tends to take the whole process of awakening far too personally. In reality, there is nothing personal about it. Maybe that's why Joseph S. Benner wrote the book, The Impersonal Life. Maybe he's tapping into the same kind of truth that pervades the Way of Mastery and the Course in Miracles. The text goes on and says, there is only Christ as the Creator's true and only creation. And the field of illusion that has been birthed through the freedom of that mind when once it thought, I wonder what I can create, and if I can create something unlike creation itself. Those are the only two options, love and fear, reality or illusion. Therefore, all that you see that is unlike love are merely passing phenomena arising within the holy mind of Christ as temporary attempts to do something different than what Christ is created for. Therefore, when anything arises within the mind, it is truly not necessary to analyze it. Certainly do not argue for it, but rather come back to the point of ignorance. Quote, I do not know what this thought or this image or this emotion or this memory is for. But I do know one thing. I have made a commitment to reawaken as Christ. Therefore, I will use this one moment, this one thought, this one passing phenomenon, to practice what I was created for, to bless creation and thereby transform it into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful, infinitely, eternally, with joy, with innocence, with graciousness, with peace, and with marvel at the great mystery that love is, that creation is. Close quotes. For my mind and the Western mind that needs to make a shift, right? If I don't change what I do with my mind energy, and my mind energy is what creates my experience of life, then I don't change my life. No matter how much I might change the outside trappings, nothing has changed. And the Western mind is trained and conditioned, some would say programmed or brainwashed, to decide that it knows what's right and what's wrong, that it can judge. And it frequently uses anger, bitterness, hurt, resentment as energies to pound home its view. And so here's a different way to look at it. Here's what's being recommended in the 18th lesson in the Way of Mastery, that you cultivate the practice of blessing the world from that space of ignorance, the opposite of what the Western world would train us to do. The Western mind, we were listening to David White, and he talked about how obvious it is that in the Western world and the school system, they train students to know an answer, a pat answer. And yet life is so complex and so layered that it's ridiculous to think we know this and that and to boil things down into these little pat answers and quick responses. So what's the technique for cultivating the practice of blessing the world? Quote, I do not know what this thought or this image or this emotion or this memory is for. It's moving through my mind right now. I have no idea what it's for. I have no idea what it's there. And yet I know one thing. I have made a commitment to reawaken as Christ. Therefore, I will use this moment. I will use this thought or this passing phenomena to practice what I was created for, to bless creation and thereby transform it into that which extends the good, the holy and the beautiful. How will I bless his creation? By just allowing and surrendering and accepting it just as it is and asking to be shown, asking to be taught how to be a blessing in this moment, what is the lesson in it for me, how is it going to work out far better than anything I could have planned. So I put myself in that willingness, observing space, open, allowing, willing space. Therefore, I will use this one moment, this one thought, this one passing phenomenon to practice what I was created for. And that is to bless creation and thereby transform it into that which extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful. And it extends the good, the holy, and the beautiful infinitely, eternally, with joy, with innocence, with graciousness, with peace, and with marvel at the great mystery that love is, that creation is. That has taken me quite a bit of work. I imagine I will continue working on that. If I intend to get any better at it, I will have to continue working on it as long as I'm drawing breath. Why? Because for at least 45 years in my life, I was conditioned to the opposite, to try and figure out what is the answer, to grab a hold of it, to own it, to claim that I have the answer that's better than somebody else's, or everybody else has an answer better than mine. So the conditioning of the brain has a tremendous momentum behind it. The text goes on and says, as you come to fully, truly understand how simple your task is, your burden will become lighter, for you will discover that you cannot help but be in the right place at the right time. Those committed to awakening to creation recognize the great gift in every moment. Quote, here is creation's will right before me. This is the moment that is crying for love, for acceptance, for surrender. Close quotes. The text goes on and says, this is the moment that will be repeated ad nauseum until someone, somebody, somewhere decides to bless it. So it might as well be you. Creation waits upon your welcome by merely holding the thought within your mind. Quote, all right, it's all arising within me anyway. I've tried a million ways to avoid it and get away from it, and yet it seems to follow me wherever I go. I might as well sit down on the park bench, have a nice cold glass of water, listen to the birds sing, and simply bless creation. Now, many of you are not yet to the point of truly transcending or creating the transparency that you have identified as your, quote, personal stuff, close quotes, that which makes up the I within the phenomenal world. That is fine, as you simply practice blessing the world as it arises in your awareness, the very sense of I becomes increasingly transparent until it simply dissolves away in light as though it had never been. And that, for most people in the Western mind, is a terrifying thought. They can use it to generate a tremendous amount of fear. Oh my God, I'm going to cease to be. Who I am, my sense of identity, my height, my weight, my great sense of humor, my spiritual teaching, my bank account, my car, my stereo. Oh my gosh, it's going to cease to be. I can't continue to do this work. I can't wake up to being a Christ because who I am is going to get dissolved. The text goes on and says, in the meantime, come back to what we shared earlier. Time is given to you that you might use it constructively. Therefore, do not seek to trample what you call the ego or the sense of personal self. It is simply there. It is what is arising. Are you willing to bless it? If it's part of creation, you need to bless it. Even if it's a part of creation that only you experience, as we were talking about earlier, the life that you perceive is not being experienced by anyone outside of you. It's only being created in your mind. Everybody creates their own perception of their life, even if they're standing shoulder to shoulder watching a train go by or watching a football game or listening to a lecture in a school. Your life, the world you're experiencing, is only happening inside your own mind, nowhere else. So even your ego needs to be blessed by you. The text goes on and says, as you, as a soul, already dreaming the dream of separation, as you begin to create the phenomena of what you perceive to be separate lifetimes, falling into the condensation or density of physicality, we have shared with you that patterns began to settle into the nervous system. Deep into the nervous system of the body and the mind. Belief systems, not yours, but rather coming from the field of your parents and of the culture and of the time frame into which you incarnated, these fields literally imprint themselves in the mind and in the literal nervous system of the body. These are cellular imprints. Your creation waits on your welcome. Therefore, can you turn back to the body-mind? Can you turn back to your very memories that seem to be associated with an individual self and with a personal history? And rather than trying to pretend that it is not there, simply recognize if that is how you are perceiving yourself. And then bring love to it. Stop trying to shake off the ego like you could shake your hand off of your arm. Those that choose to turn back and look upon their experience within the singular field of your body-mind arising from the moment of conception unto the present moment of where you find yourself at whatever age, those who are doing that, who are turning the mind back to look upon itself, those are the people who are already engaged in the highest work of Christ. For they are choosing to turn back and embrace creation by looking upon ancient memories and no longer fearing them, but allowing them to be brought into the awareness by whatever means so that the memory can be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. Blessed, transformed, healed, and released. What kind of memory? I'm talking about trauma memory. Are you kidding me? You want me to bless the trauma memory I have? You want me to let somebody else off the hook? No. I'm not talking about letting somebody else off the hook. This book is not talking about letting somebody else off the hook. This book is talking about understanding that if you're holding on to a resentment or a bitterness or the trauma memory itself and the judgment of it is bad or wrong and never should have happened, you're creating suffering for yourself. And this book understands you don't deserve that suffering. So simply recognize how you are perceiving yourself. The traumas, the personal history, the judgments, and then bring love to them. if you choose to turn inward, which is what they were asking us to do, one of the heading titles in the 17th lesson, turn inward. Spend more time looking inward, less time looking outside yourself, and no time whatsoever blaming either yourself or anybody else for what you're experiencing. Seeing it clearly, bringing love to it, softening, breathing, allowing it to flow through you. If you do that, you're already engaged in the highest work of Christ. For they are choosing to turn back and embrace creation by looking upon ancient memories, and they're no longer fearing them, but allowing them to be brought into the awareness by whatever means necessary, so that that memory can be blessed, transformed, healed, and released. I can't bless and transform, heal, and release a memory of trauma if I'm bringing it up in my mind as though it's happening right now. I must be able to keep part of my consciousness focused on the truth of what's happening now and the fact that I am not being actively abused in this moment. And yet the memory that has been activated in me is flooding my energy system, this mind-body energy system, with the same kind of emotions and energies that happened years ago when I was traumatized. So part of me sees, feels, hears, and understands it as though it's happening in the moment, and another part of me stays rooted in the present moment where I am totally safe, where the abuse is not happening, and keeps, metaphorically speaking, one foot in each place. And from that present moment awareness, I can bless everything that's happened to me in the past. I can surrender to it. I can ask to be shown by it. I can allow it. I can embrace it in love because I understand that it's not happening in the moment and it was never happening to me, because the essence of who or what I am is not my ego, is not my sense of propriety and my sense of inhibitions. Who or what I am is the ultimate ability to be conscious that permeates everything. The text goes on and says, "Beloved friends, looking backwards into time, into your seemingly personal experience, can seem horrifying. Yet I say unto you that the sense of horror that many of you feel is not linked to the memories themselves. It is only linked to what you have decided to believe about the memory and nothing else. So the horror you're feeling is linked to the meaning that you gave this event. Begin then by forgiving yourself for your past." In other words, dismantling the false perceptions that you have created and placed on the events of your past. Look upon the objects just as we did with the initial meditation or exercise. Look upon the objects that are the memories of your past and say within your mind, quote, "I forgive you," paraphrased as, "I dismantle every negative perception I have created about you. You are perfectly neutral. I choose now to remember you, to re-member, to bring into myself, to embrace again that I might bless you." Close quotes. With that blessing, you release the terror, the hurt, the judgment, the fear, and the incredible dramas that you seem to have dreamt. And by releasing that burden of illusion, that memory becomes as a crystal, as a gem given unto you by a part of the infinite journey that seems to be yours, but truly belongs to everyone. Transformed and purified because you brought Christ to the illusion. And you brought Christ to the illusion so that creation might be transformed. The next heading is a simple exercise to forgive and bless the past. The text reads, I want to offer unto you a simple exercise. It will take you 30 days if you apply yourself daily. This need not take more than perhaps 10 or 15 minutes. Merely come to your chair. It's your place of devotion, your place of meditation or prayer, and begin with the exercise of abiding as Christ for 5 minutes. When that is completed, then simply continue by recognizing that you do not know what a single thing is or what it is for, that you do not know what a single brother or sister now in your life or who has crossed your path has ever truly needed. Admit your ignorance. Not an easy thing to do for the Western mind. Some of us have a very strong association with getting punished when we didn't know an answer, getting punished for being ignorant in a certain way. And by this is not a negative thing. Ignorance is simply a description of something I haven't yet learned or I don't even know exists. It's got nothing to do with my level of intelligence. Ignorance has nothing to do with my level of intelligence. It's a description of whether or not I have had exposure to and learned about certain areas of topic of consideration. So the exercise is to simply admit your ignorance and then simply and deliberately say within your mind, quote, I choose to forgive the creation that will now be brought into my awareness. Holy Spirit, what is in need of my blessing? So I'm going to dismantle any negative judgments I have about the next thing that comes into my mind and then ask how to bless it. The text goes on and says, as you sit, observing what comes into the field of your mind, the field of awareness, it may in fact be hidden a sudden tightness in a muscle. Do not overlook that. For even if it is arising within the field of the mind, even it is arising within the field of your mind. Just be with whatever that creation seems to be, whether it's a picture, memory, a feeling, a physical sensation, a sensation in the body, a thought, an emotion. Just be with it. Single it out and stay with it. Look upon it and once again practice forgiveness in this simple way. Quote, object of creation, I forgive you the judgment I have placed upon you. And thereby it is released. Now do I embrace you as you truly are. So I'm going to let go of my thought about you or this thing. I'm going to ask to be shown how to see the truth of you or this thing. I'm going to ask to be shown how to see the shimmering radiance of the creative energy that's giving rise to this person or thing in front of me, just as it's giving rise to me. The text goes on and says, literally feel yourself forgiving, releasing, and embracing. Those that wish to visualize might see themselves taking a hand, wrapping it around that thought, that object, that memory, or that sensation in the muscle, and doing so lovingly and gently as though you were holding the most delicate of flowers, the most beautiful flower ever created. you might be holding something that's a gift directly from creation, and we want you to look upon it and simply say, quote, I am Christ, and in this moment, I use greatest glory. Beloved object, I bless you. I embrace you. I heal you. Then, if it is a picture in the mind or the thought, simply allow it to be dissolved. Notice that as the image dissolves, you will detect that there is a feel of spaciousness and peace that you may have not noticed before. The object of creation has simply become transparent to the reality of who you truly are, for peace is the nature of the Christ. They suggest that you do this as long as it is comfortable and the mind does not seem to waver or get too rattled. If it seems to become uncomfortable, simply notice that discomfort, acknowledge, and thank yourself for your willingness to heal creation. Then let the exercise go and be about your day. Come back to this exercise as often as you wish, but at least once a day for each of the next 30 days. Many of you will begin to see a certain pattern emerging. That is, many of the objects that come for healing may seem to be almost chronologically linked to your experience in this life. Others of you may notice that you're tapping into a multitude of other lifetimes, and some of you will experience and realize that over this 30 days, nothing seemed to show up which was what you could link in a personal causal way. But rather, it seems to be presented to you by something else and seems to be coming from some unknown dimension of the universe. Please, as you do this work, let not seriousness enter the mind. Never judge what you see, what you feel, or the thought that arises. There are many dimensions of creation, many forms of life, and many ways in which experience is created. Do not judge what you see, what you think, or what you feel, but hold it as an object that has been brought to you by the Holy Spirit, who is asking you, as Christ, to bring the healing of blessing to it. So this is a practice for healing by bringing blessing. Everything in the world, bringing blessing to everything that you experience. Begin sitting as the Christ, and then notice every thought, every image, every physical sensation as it comes up. Notice any judgment that you have against it, about it, for it, or against it, and cancel them. Cancel the thought, cancel the judgment, and ask to be shown the hidden nature of the truth of life behind it. If you have any goal for this thing or this person that you're looking at, that will need to be canceled. Embracing something as it is in direct opposition to holding a goal for it. So I may need to do reality management worksheets. I may need to do actual goal canceling. But in this exercise, I can do it all mentally. And as great teachers have taught us, there is tremendous power and benefit for us to gain in our lives if we choose to actively bless creation. So that's all we're going to read for today. We'll pick up again here tomorrow. how is it that every judgment we have takes us further and further away from the actuality of life? How is it that we can observe that directly and begin to see the consequences that we are creating, the ripples of effect that we are creating in the illusion of separation as we judge? And what is it that we can start to experience if we begin to bless, to allow, to accept, to embrace, to celebrate everything in the flow of life? That's what we will only discover as we step into the practice. And as I talked about a little earlier in this hour, the Western mind is conditioned to the opposite of this. As David White points out in his talk the other day, our entire educational system is built around this idea that answers will be given and taught, and then they need to be repeated back. And that there must be great discomfort and consternation or even punishment if people can't find a simple, quick, repeatable answer and feed that back to the teacher. The entire concept of learning to live in the question or to generate beautiful questions that will take time and complexity and the flow of life to grow into any kind of a reasonable answer for it, that whole process is not just absent in our educational system, it's basically the opposite. We basically have people getting punished for questioning and punished for the desire to learn to live in the question. So if you're interested in accelerating your growth on this path, what they told us in Lesson 17 is focus more on your internal life and reactions with that welcoming, questioning, childlike innocence. Focus less and less on the outside world and focus none of your energy on judging. Learning to live in the question, catching judgments and releasing them, dismantling my false perceptions, using the process of forgiveness, all of this adds up to accelerating my movement toward where I say I want to be, which is alive, awake, and aware in the moment, willing and able to bless creation, awakening the Christ mind within me. So that's our show for today. It's the first hour. Michael and Jeannie will be here for the second hour. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate you.
You're most welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Monday, August the 8th, 2022, and our call-in number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue to talk to us. We'd love to hear your comments and questions because that makes this your show. And we'll give Michael a moment to dial in. I'll direct you to the website again, whyagain.org. And scroll around. I put a few more things under multimedia, under watch and listen for free, and the stories, poems, songs, and quotes. So go to those and click and look around and listen and let us know what you think. And in the meantime, I hope everybody had a really good weekend. And we've got Aria again today. We're kind of counting down. We've got 2 weeks to vacation time, which I am really looking forward to. I couldn't tell you the last time I had been at the beach and put my feet in the sand, and I am so looking forward to doing that. We leave on the 20th. We will still be doing the show during the week, and things will still be moving and going right on. But welcome, Michael. Hello, Michael.
Thank you, dear.
And we
heart.
Do already have a
and
hand up, too.
Everybody. Oh, great. Well, let's say hello. Let's go for
all
it.
Right. It is, I believe it is Michael, 770. You're on the air.
Awesome.
Hi, folks. How are you?
Hey, young man. Looking forward to continuing the conversation.
Oh, wonderful. I am also. Y'all have a, I think Jeannie said you had a great weekend, so that's
we
good.
Did.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
Wonderful.
A good chunk of it was spent restructuring our compost bin.
Well, that's a very important thing for future food.
It is, for sure. It is. Got a nice piece of information from a YouTube university, and that was that something I hadn't thought of, but of course you need to get oxygen into the compost, and you know, I'd structured these bins and they were getting pretty full, they're good size, and this one person made a suggestion of creating a frame covered with a wire mesh so that air can pass through it and put it underneath the compost bin so air moves underneath and circulates there. So I took everything out and put in pallets, covered them with a chicken wire kind of thing, or small squares chicken wire, so the dirt stays on top of it and takes composting to another level. So we're learning
great
as
sense.
Time
That's
moves
good.
On. Yeah.
Very nice. Get the airflow all around.
Exactly, exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So what's on your mind
to
today?
I was going to just share with you, I got to go to some wonderful gardening meetings.
Tell me.
Saturday, and that was really, really, really nice. Some organic gardening clubs. So that was, really enjoyed that. Learned a lot.
Was that up in Ava?
Yes.
Cool.
Yes, it was. So, yeah, makes the weekend go by really quick, that's for sure. So, on Friday, I learned that fear is the base of sadness. And I listened to parts of Dr. Tim, the show just before, and I believe I heard him say that guilt is the mother of fear. Did I understand that correctly?
I'm not sure. They'd certainly tie in, but for me, guilt would be a thought disorder degrading or blaming self. Where fear would lay in a thought disorder of loss or threat. So I would see them kind of differently, but, you know, Tim might have a different way of tying that one together.
And I may have heard it incorrectly. I was doing a few things, a few different things had come up that hour. So we'll come back to that. That wasn't the original thing. I'm just thinking if guilt ties in there, boy, I need to process that sometime. But back to fear, the base of sadness. So my thought is I guess been taught, modeled that when someone is having a rough time, a loss, words would come forth. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm saddened by that news. And now I am rethinking all of those words. And it may not be the best idea to be using those phrases. Just wondering what you could share with us about how to express empathy for someone who who's experienced a rough time or just experienced a loss, things along those lines, please.
Well, one of the things that that we have in this work, another one of the tools, I call it the apology tool, and it harkens back to a movie that was popular many years ago, and the byline for the movie was, love means you never have to say you're sorry. And we suggest eradicating the words I'm sorry from your vocabulary totally and completely. And if you see someone who is in a position where they're experiencing pain or trauma, that the best gift you can give them, the best way you can uplift them, is by holding to the truth of who you are, which, as that line in the worksheet says, when I choose love, it wakes up the love in everyone. If I can hold a space of active love, then I'm making the highest contribution I can possibly make to that person, would be my offering. If an event that happens to someone that they're in sadness or fear or pain about resonates something painful in me, falling into the trap of believing that that event is the cause of my pain renders me unable to really serve them at the highest level. So at that point, I might notice that, I'm seeing that you're in a lot of pain. And yes, I understand your mind is telling you that it's about the event that happened. And my mind is doing the same for me. So what I'm going to do before we interact is I'm going to engage in some forgiveness work so that I can come pure and clean as the presence of love in support of you. And if I do something where I see that my behavior has in some way enhanced someone's experience of pain, then rather than being sorry about it, first I want to own, I apologize. I realize I stepped on your toes and that hurt. So I'm owning what I did rather than being sorry about it. And then, and this is because, it acknowledges the fact that we are creative beings. Probably the greatest atrocity done to us down through history and that we've bought into is that we've had hidden from ourselves the fact that we are by nature creators. And the way we create is by engaging in mind energy. Those opening words were back to those words in the book of John that didn't say in the beginning was the word and the word became flesh, but rather in the beginning was the mind energy and the mind energy became flesh. So let's say I did something like accidentally stepped on your toes because I was being, let's say, careless. So if I tell you how sorry I am that I stepped on your toes, I've resonated the error in me, I've resonated the error in you, and now our minds joined, and me standing in sorrow about it is going to tend to mean I'll be doing it again sometime because it's the energy of attraction, the energy we've intensified. Whereas if I go to the alternative and utilize the apology tool, I realize that that was a mistake, what I did in stepping on your toes, and I apologize for that. And in the future, and here's where I want to get this person joining with me in what I want to do as a replacement for the error that I made. And in the future, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be very aware of where your feet are and honor you enough to pay attention to you and make sure that you're taken care of. So now I've got this other person's mind and my mind joining in creating a solution to the problem rather than both being lost in the problem itself. If I see someone's in pain and I come to them with a heart connected with love, I offer them the best uplift possible. And sorry just isn't part of that equation. I can very deeply express, I can see that you're hurting at the, someone passed. I can see that you're hurting at the loss that's going on, that's really brought up a lot of pain for you. And I'm here to support you healing that hurting part of you. And even in the context of this person having died, I'm here to support you being the space of love in that experience. And in doing so, returning to each person involved in the conversation, to the space of active love, we get to have a much truer experience of what it is that has occurred. You know, stepping on someone's toes or someone dying, we get to have a much deeper experience of that. And many people over the years that I've worked with who've had the honor of being with someone when they've passed out of their bodies has expressed how profoundly powerful and beautiful the experience was for them of being conscious and being there with someone passing, and that it wasn't, you know, the terror and trauma that our culture makes it out to be. I have one woman that I worked with. Yeah, I have one woman that I worked with, and this is probably the most profound case. Actually, Julie Haversick has shared on the show more than once, and I don't know that we could pinpoint one of the shows where she's done that, but you could ask her to share with you that she was there for both the passing of her mother and her father, and very profound experiences, very powerful experiences for her, and very sweet memories for her. Because her mind, she'd done her work, and her mind wasn't focused on the loss, but on holding a space for them, for their journey. And I remember working with a woman, this goes back into the early days of this work, almost 40 years ago, I was in South Florida, and there was a woman who was in her late 70s, and her mother and father were in their 90s. And father was ill. They knew he was getting ready to pass, but nobody in the family, it was like a family taboo. You don't say the word death in this family. And as a result of working with me and working through the fear and trauma that she had around death, she was finally able to go home to her parents and have a conversation about the fact that her father's death was imminent. That created a whole upset in the family, which was very temporary. And she stayed, you know, she was doing her work. She was someone I'd probably worked with her for, by the time this issue came up, probably 3 years. And she had worked with me on a weekly basis every week for that 3 year period. And she was able to hold the space and go through the upset that went through the family. And then the family conversation turned to the meaning that each of the family members had for each other. And for the first time in her life, this is a woman who was in her mid to late 70s, for the first time in her life, she, as a result of bringing that conversation up, she heard the words from her father, "I love you." So we can be stuck in the unresolved pain and trauma of the past and live out of the language of the culture that's developed around the pain and trauma is always caused by something out there, or we can move into a space where we're actually connected to that presence of love, that being that we are, and not be living out of carbon-based memories, misinterpretation of events that turn what potentially can be very profoundly powerful events in supporting them being what they really are rather than degrading them to some sort of repeating trauma. Why is this happening to me again from the past? And of course, when someone passes, I mean, when this woman, when her father passed, she wasn't happy that he'd passed. She still had longing for him, but what she shared with me was that she felt like, and when he died, she had two children, and her two children, she and her mother, were around his bed. One was holding one hand on one side, and they formed a chain around the bed, and another one was holding his other hand. And she said it was one of the most beautiful and one of the most powerful moments in her whole life in relationship to her father. And she felt like she had a better relationship with her father after he passed than she'd ever had when he was alive. So if we live out the family tradition, you know, that movie Tradition, if we live out the family tradition, then we're locked into pretty much a singular experience that replicates what's gone on in past generations. And that, you know, in one context is living life out of the desert, out of the unconscious. That story about, you know, the Jews being lost in the desert for 40 years. My offering is it's not about these people being so dumb that they could possibly be lost in a 35 square mile area for 40 years, as though it were about a physical hot sandy place, but rather that desert idea is a code word for the unconscious, and that most people live until they're about 40 before they start scratching their heads and going, why is this happening to me again? What's going on here? What's possible? And then if you read that passage about the desert, you listen to what they said had to happen in order to move out of the desert. And I'd offer that living in the desert is just living in the replicant mind, replicating things from the past, and the why is this happening to me again experience. And then the alternative, you'll remember, they called the promised land. And what's the promised land? It's not about some, you know, heavenly space off in the sky somewhere. The promised land is a land of conscious co-creation where we get to live as we were designed to live, as co-creators with the Creator, and living as the active presence of love. Today, here, now, like real, where we live, not some, you know, otherworldly kind of thing that leaves people able to ignore and avoid doing the work they have to do and focused on some future place or some future time. You look at that situation where the disciples come to Yeshua, and basically, and at that point there was the 12, and then there were several others, and they basically say, well, what do we need to do to make the Creator happy? And Yeshua uses a metaphor, and uses an idiom tell them what they need to do. And in essence, his idiom is, you've got to do your internal work, and you have to show up in your life as love. And literally half of the disciples said too hard a saying and left and never came back. That's the point where Yeshua turned to Peter and says, are you guys going to leave too? Yeah, I've given you a hard assignment. I've said you have to go inside yourself and you have to resolve everything that's based in hostility or fear. And half of them went away. No, I'm not going to do that. That's too hard a saying. I suspect they're the ones that went off and made this easy theology of, oh, well, made it up that there's nothing you can do. Obviously not the teachings of Yeshua. They said too hard a saying, what you're telling us we have to do in order to really be in relationship with love. In essence, you know, the idiom that they gave him, or that he gave them, was, you've got to eat my body and drink my blood. Now, in today's general interpretation, that means wine and wafers. You have to take communion. It's like, what's the hard saying about that? He obviously didn't mean you have to take communion. That right. Idiom, eat my body and drink my blood, means you're going to have to live up to the standard I'm living as the active presence of love. You're going to have to face everything in you that is unlike love. You're going to have to face every hate and fear and rage and guilt and grief and drama and trauma and family challenge and cultural challenge that exists in you. And then you get to live as the Creator intended you to live. And half of them left too hard a saying and made up this, well, there's nothing you can do, you just have to let him do it all for you, which clearly wasn't a message that came from him.
Mm-hmm. Quite a big difference.
Quite a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Well, this words that you have used helped us understand about apologies versus I'm sorry. That, as I'm processing that, that's going to connect hearts a whole lot
yes.
better and deeper than just an I'm sorry.
Yes. And it upgrades the whole creative process.
Say that one more time, please.
I say it upgrades the whole creative process when you realize that everything we engage in is expressing our creative capacity, and if I lend my creative capacity to how sore I am and how terrible it was and how guilty I am and how bad I was and how wrong I was for what I did, but I'm sorry for it, that's going to lead to one creative process in somebody's life. And someone who says, yes, and I see I really made an error and I apologize for my error, and in the future, here's my correction. Join with me and support me with that. I got a whole different creative process going on in my life. And that different creative process, as you say, it's going to connect hearts, is going to do exactly what Yeshua said he came to do, and that was, he said, I come to bring you life, life more abundantly. Not, I come to bring you dogma and doctrine. I come to bring you how to live your life as a true human being. And the best definition, I think I've shared this with you, that I found for love is that for life is that life is love flowing through a cell. And anything that we do that inhibits love flowing through our cellular structure sets us up for death. Forgiveness removes the energetic blocks we've put into our structure that inhibit life and return us to life. And imagine 7.5 billion people waking up tomorrow morning, understanding that they are literally created love, and they all of a sudden, everything that they've used to inhibit their experience and expression of love is removed. How different does the world become? No rage, no guilt, no fear, no terror, no trauma. A person who holds those energetic patterns has applied forgiveness and removed them. Life just becomes a whole different process. You know, like, what's it going to look like? I don't know, but it's sure going to be different than it is today.
Yes,
and that's
will.
Basically why we're doing what we're doing, is to make these tools available so that that becomes a very real possibility for humanity.
I'll tell you, that definition of life, that is really moving. Life, love flowing through our cell. And
yes.
versus the option of anger, hostility, fear.
Correct.
Creates a whole different...
Those things are not...
different.
Well, those things are not life. Those things are death. Those things inhibit the flow of love through our cellular structure, and it creates death. Now go back to the ancient scriptures, and they were really clear. The Creator didn't make up death. Many people put it on, well, you know, there is a passage that said, point to once each to die. Well, it also says, with man, death began. We made the process up. We're the ones who engaged in the energetic patterns that were of a disintegrative nature. Again, remember that the disintegrative nature, the word for that in Aramaic is sin, an archery term that means off the mark. We're the ones that engaged in the energetic patterns that took us off the mark and separated us from the active presence of love, which is both the Creator's true nature and our true nature. So what if everything that's based in any form of hostility or fear, of course it requires thinking, mind energy, that restricts the flow of love. What if anything that comes up in us that resembles that, instead of giving it a vent and expression, instead of making up a perceptual world based in that, each time anything like that surfaces, forgiveness is applied. I look at the goal that's driving my mind in that moment. Once I specifically identify the goal, I cancel it and I invite that super processor, Ruka Dekudja, that Yeshua spoke about in Aramaic, she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth. I invite that power to go to work and remove those things, and I sit in a place of quiet and listening, ready to be instructed on the truth.
Yeah, we want life flowing through ourselves.
Exactly. And to support that life flowing through the cell of literally every other individual on planet Earth. no matter how deep and dark and destructive their expression is. You know, another game of the culture, you know, we've got, you know, literally, when you look at the fact that here in America, we have literally 5% of the world's population, and we have 25% of the world's population, of our population, five times that in this country, in prisons, in penal institutions, doing penance, trying to make up for wrongdoing, being punished. And all of that is based in insanity. All of that is based in error. Yes, there is a place for a prison cell. I had one of my mentors in the early days was a man named Judge Asadi Kelly. He was the head of prisons at one time for the state of Georgia, and then he moved on from there and became a Superior Court judge in Albany, Georgia. And I never once, although he put thousands of people in prison, some of them for a long, long time, from his position on the bench, he never punished one person. The most heinous criminals could come before him. And in essence, what he'd say is, I love you like a brother, but you know, I really love my community too. He used the word love as a verb, not a noun, which we've come to understand is an incorrect use of it, but that was how he used the words. But, I mean, someone would come before Judge Kelly who had committed some of the most heinous crimes you can imagine, and he would offer them love, and he'd say, in essence, the community took up a collection and built a building with bars around it, and they asked me to decide who's safe to be in the community and who damages the community, and you damage the community. And so I'm going to put you behind bars. Now, it was Judge Kelly, actually, that asked for and prompted the development of the course that we teach called Laws of Living, which was originally designed for the prison system, cut recidivism by over 90% when active in a prison. And he would take someone that he was sentencing long-term and sentence them literally to taking that course in order to heal themselves, in order to return them to the space of active present love. And where the recidivism rate was normally, you know, 75, 80, 90%, we cut that by over 9%. We dropped down to less than 10% return to prison, became return offenders. Many of them became teachers of this work, teachers of laws of living, to support fellow inmates.
That's nearly a total reversal.
Nearly a total reversal, yes.
Yes, nearly.
The accurate teachings of this man from his original Aramaic does exactly that, creates a total reversal.
Powerful, powerful, Michael.
Well, you know, I feel so blessed to have, and for me it was stumbled across Aramaic language over four decades ago and caught a whiff of its importance, and then began to engage it to understand it on a deeper level. And, you know, virtually everything that I'm saying and talking about comes out of that Aramaic thought structure, which, you know, has pretty much been purposely eradicated. And, you know, as you kind of tongue-in-cheek heard me say, if Yeshua sat in most of Christianity's establishments in the Western world today, he'd say that's all Greek to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's Greek thought that it's put in his mouth. It's not his original Aramaic thought.
Yes. It's all Greek. That's a whole other thought pattern there, how things became so different than the original intent, I guess, from east to west. In many realms. So may we switch to something again from Friday and bring that
question
on something? We talked about the emotional DNA, the physical DNA, and I had a question. I had listened to a podcast some time ago where they spoke about the Akashic Records. So I was thinking about that again on Friday. If we have these emotional patterns, they're definitely energetic. So what does this mean where some of the folks talked about all this being recorded in Akashic Records? Any thought on that? Anything you can direct in that manner?
Well, you know, when you look at the worksheet, you see the initial CBM in carbon-based memory. And if you recognize that the mind, what the scriptures refer to as the mind of man, is simply the movement of energy stored within our structure from the past. And if we were to tico into a physicist and have them break your body down to all of its essential elements, the base element of each person's form is carbon. If you look at the carbon atom, at its structure, and this kind of might just tie into something they spoke of many years ago, you know, remember that definition, Yeshua, he speaks to Peter and calls Peter Satan. He says, "Get thee behind me, Satan, for you think in the mind of man rather than the mind I'm thinking in, which is the plan of God, the mind of God, the Creator." So we can think with the mind of love, which my offering would be in the scriptural terms, that would, it's not a religious idea, but that we each have a birthright, and that is to think in the mind of love, which is literally the Creator's mind, or what they called the mind of Christ. You know, you listen to Paul and he says, that's your hope. That mind in you is to go to that mind of love in you. And then, you know, when he, in that situation in the Garden of Gethsemane, refers to Peter as Satan, and he defines, for you think in the mind of man rather than the plan of God. Where is this mind of man stored? It's stored in carbon-based memory. What is a carbon atom made of? It's made of 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 666. Familiar number?
Oh, yes.
What goes against you and I living as the active present love, living out of that mind of love, the mind of the Creator, which is our birthright, what goes against us doing that? You know, you and I go into a room and an experience happens. And let's say it's an experience that we both agree is a terrible, you know, horrible, disgusting display of what humans are capable of. But, you know, you watch the event happen, and I watch the event happen, and my reality is totally different from yours. Let's say my reality as I watch that event happen, with my carbon, what it resonates in my carbon-based memory is terror. Oh, this is just, I'm terrorized. Oh, this is so terrorizing. I am so terrorized. And you watch the event happen, and, you know, what you perceive, the perceptual construct that comes from your carbon-based memory is, this is just disgusting and sad. Well, my carbon-based memory served up one perceptual construct. I'm terrorized. Your perceptual mind, your carbon-based memory, made up a different perceptual construct. Sadness. Why are they different? They're different because the content of your carbon-based memory is different from the content of my carbon-based memory. What is it that goes against the mind of love in anyone? It's what's stored in carbon-based memory. The anti. So we've got the mind of Christ, not a religious term, simply that we're designed to live out of a mind based in love. So we've got the mind of Christ, or we have that which goes against the mind of Christ, which logically would be called the Antichrist. And what's its number? Where does it come from? Where is it stored? Carbon-based memory. So in any given event, 1,000 people are in the room and 999 of them are in trauma because they have unresolved trauma within their carbon-based memory. And everybody points at the event and said, look how much that event traumatized me. The event didn't traumatize them. It just showed them what was carried in carbon-based memory. So they do one of two things. They either make up a story about how the event was the cause of their pain and trauma, and they live in denial, dissociation, and projection, projecting their pain on the event, or they see the opportunity to learn forgiveness here and recognize, well, an event happened, and it sure brought up some trauma in me, terror in me. So now what I'm going to do, now that I realize and I've been informed, now that I've got the eyes to see and the ears to hear, that I have been informed that there's terror in me, I'm now going to apply forgiveness to terror in me and remove literally the energetic patterns of terror. Once removed, there is no capacity for the mind to generate a perceptual construct based in terror because I've forgiven terror in me. I don't let the person who was involved in what brought the terror up in me off the hook, I don't forgive them. I don't apply forgiveness to them. Now, maybe what they did was some really awful, horrible thing, and so I might choose to pardon them. So I realize you were really off base, and I'm going to just let you off the hook, and I'm going to go inside myself, and I'm going to work on forgiving this terror in me. So I now apply forgiveness appropriately to the condition in my own mind that's inhibiting my ability to experience myself as the active presence of love. So now as a result of that horrible, awful thing you did, I get to heal my terror or my fear or my sadness or my grief or my rage or whatever it happens to be that's stored in carbon-based memory that mitigates against me experiencing myself as my created essence, active present love. The mind of man healed now. The mind of man in me becomes fueled by that presence of love rather than by the unresolved traumas held perhaps in the genes, perhaps in epigenetics from the past. So now everything becomes an opportunity to learn forgiveness, and I recognize that the only way I can experience a trauma in this situation is if that trauma is in me. The situation itself holds no trauma. Now, I might say, well, but that's a situation I'd rather not create again. Well, I agree with you. Why were you there when it happened? You had a resonance with it. And if you approach it what I would consider to be correctly and apply forgiveness and remove the resonance in you for that kind of trauma, you're not going to pull that trauma into your field again because resonance is one of the things that creates motion. And anything that we hold unresolved, we are literally a walking energy field that will attract, if that energy is anywhere in the environment, will attract that experience to ourselves. And recognizing, especially if I've said to myself, geez, why is this happening to me again? Then I recognize there's something in me to be resolved. I begin to chip away at and resolve that. And I come to each experience with a new mind, living out of the mind of Christ in me, the mind of love in me. Again, not a religious idea, just the fact that we are beings created from love and we're designed to think with the mind of love. And when I bring that mind into my carbon-based memory, everything is made new. When that's the active force field in my physiology, in my carbon-based memory, then everything begins to transform as a result of the active presence of love that now lives in me, and I don't get fooled by the constructs of my mind that say, ah, look, that one was Bill's fault. Oh, that one was Harry's fault. Oh, Hortense, you really need to blame Hortense. It's like, no, I realize that my physiology is producing something based in trauma. It's time for me to apply forgiveness and get rid of it.
So as you're saying, the only way I'm going to experience trauma if I'm involved in a situation is that I experience that because it's already in me.
Correct. If you don't bring it to the party, you don't experience it when you're there. You know, one of the things when people do an intensive, I offer, you know, there may be all kinds of things you're going to experience as you open the space and choose to do your work. But here's the promise I have for you. You won't experience anything you didn't bring with you, the good, the bad, or the ugly.
Wow.
And if it comes up in you, then the space is here to support you, owning it, throwing it away, working through it, forgiving it, removing that energetic pattern. And why would you experience that energetic pattern? Because it's there. How could you get to the end of experiencing that pattern? Remove it. How do you remove it? First century Aramaic forgiveness. That's what the worksheet's all about.
Reality worksheets, okay.
So the energies that we engage in are stored holographically through every cell in our structure. And so my take would be that would be what would be called the Akashic Records. And it's theorized beyond that, that it's also stored in the what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious, that energetically the universe maintains a record of everything that moves within it, every energy that moves. It's interesting, there are records, if you look back through history, and when they began to patent things, that there are patents that were filed literally within minutes of each other by people in completely different countries who had no communication whatsoever with them. But let's say maybe somebody in Italy and somebody in Brazil and somebody in America literally on the same day filed a patent with the same energetic dynamic behind it, discovering something totally new. Did they each just coincidentally make it up and file patents on the same day and three different countries, or is there a common energy field that we can tap into, which was, as Jung called it, the creative or the collective unconscious? That would be, I think, akin to connecting in with perhaps Ruka Dukuja, she who undoes the effects of our errors and teaches us the truth, that when we become available to that still small voice, when we're able to get through the noise going on in our minds and get still and quiet enough, rather than saying to Yeshua when he says, you've got to do your work, saying too hard a saying and leaving, one stays in the presence of love and continues to do their work and clean up their own minds, projecting nothing any longer.
Mm-hmm. So while we are living in this body, these records are stored in our cells while the body's alive. Is that right?
Well, at least on a cellular level, yes. Is there another level beyond that? It's theorized that there is.
Likely.
And my take would be that's what you know, people who happened into or were doing the work to understand how this energy system worked, that they created a term for it called the Akashic Records.
I see. And it makes some energy. I mean, it collectively kind of makes sense to me. So I understand that
yes.
Now to some degree. So if it's stored in the cell, we're back to life being love flowing through the cell, treat that cell as well as we can, and that is life.
Yes.
We can do that by what we
and remove anything that inhibits the movement of love through our cells, and life becomes even stronger. And, you know, if we overcome what's in the Akashic Records that have caused the death, of generations and generations and generations, every one of them, in fact, in each of our bloodlines. If we were to overcome those, we might hear the words of Yeshua echoing from Revelations, where he says, to he that overcomes, he will not taste of the second death, which I would offer. The first death is the death of awareness of ourselves as love, the true being that we are, becoming unconscious to that, formulating a false self based in hostility and fear, a self that he would eventually say, in order for you, being, to live, you, love, to live, you, non-being, the self you think of based in hostility or fear has to die, has to be removed. And as that, through forgiveness, is removed, the only thing left is the awareness of pure being, that state of active love that we are. And when we live out of that, we become conscious co-creators with the divine, which I think is the job assignment of every person here on earth, to really truly develop. You know, we do a workshop called Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. And in that, we have a purpose worksheet where people, we invite them to look at what their real purpose is. And that when we recognize what our real purpose is, then we dedicate energetically ourselves to achieving that purpose, uncovering the truth about who we are, developing. And in that workshop, I offer to people that there's what I've come to understand as a primary purpose, and then there's a secondary purpose. And the primary purpose of every human being on the earth, I would offer, is to develop a viable, conscious, spiritual body. Rather than living unconsciously through brain cells and the perceptions of self as somebody who's not good enough, or somebody who's angry all the time, or somebody who's capable, or somebody who's selfish, or somebody, whatever that is, that isn't where the truth of us lies. That's why Yeshua said that self has to die. And that as we develop this spiritual body, we have awareness and function independent of carbon-based memory. And not being dependent on carbon-based memory, we realize ourselves as beings experiencing life beyond just what this mind of man generates for us. And then, so that's the primary purpose, to develop that viable, conscious, spiritual body, and then to tap into and understand what we are here for. What's our unique purpose? And so we've got a worksheet to help people to determine what their unique purpose is, and then recognizing that that's really the key to personal power. And in that workshop, I define personal power is the ability to be continuously aware of and function out of our highest guidance. And when we have that, then we now step into behaviors that align with who we truly are as love, and what we as unique individuals in this whole experience of life are here to provide to the whole. And then become committed to that, the third section of that workshop, Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment.
So the primary purpose is to assure we have love flowing through ourselves.
Yes.
That, and secondary right. would be what we're going to do to help humanity. Just boil it down.
What our purpose is. Yes.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Virtually.
So my hunch would be that the more we work to be sure love is flowing through ourselves, the more clear our secondary purpose is going to become.
Exactly. And over the years of having done that workshop with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, virtually everybody, when they come down to it, ends up speaking about what they're here to express and do in support of the growth and the development of humanity.
That's it.
The worksheet.
Real reasoning for life.
Yeah. Yeah, the worksheet, and you can jump on. Jeannie's probably already getting the link for it now for the purpose exercise. Basically has people list, step through three different pieces of work to clarify what their secondary purpose is. And we start out and invite people to, or one of the things that happens with it is they look at what's their vision of a perfect world. What would, not the world where, you know, people come and lay gold at my feet, but rather knowing from the higher sense of being of who I am, how this world could really be working. You know, I'll often ask people, how many remember when they looked around at the world and how crazy it was and said to themselves, what's going on here? This is not the way the world's supposed to work. And most everybody over the years, over the decades that's responded to that, responds with something to the effect of they knew it had to do with love. Everybody who has a memory of that, it's like, yeah. And then how they fell out of awareness of that and bought into the what I call the good old family feeling, which sadly is based in some form of hostility or fear and tends to play out throughout a person's life, passing it from generation to generation to generation. And again, what do you do to get out of the desert? The old generation has to die off. And the root of that word generation is genari, which means cause. All of the old causes in the mind, in the Akashic record of the individual, of the family system, has to be removed to make room for love to incarnate and fulfill its true purpose.
So we each have generation upon generation upon generation in those records that are affecting us to this day.
Correct. That whenever something shows up that resonates that content, even if it hasn't been played out in 10 generations, if something that shows up resonates that content, then that content is going to tend to be projected into our carbon-based memories construct, our reality at the moment, that perceptual construct that if we don't know it's coming from us, we believe is true about the world. And we massage the content of our own minds into appearing, you remember Yeshua said, don't judge by appearances, into an appearance that makes it look like this content in me that's causing my pain is about you and caused by you. And what forgiveness does, of course, is collapse that content into the root energy, no matter how long it's been there, and give us access to the underlying energy, which, when processed out, disappears that whole issue from someone's life. Hence fulfilling the idea that we would be transformed by the renewing of our minds. So there's work to be done. And sadly, most people who are talking about Yeshua are trying to figure out some sort of a dogma or doctrine or, you know, way that people should live in order to make God happy rather than doing the work of cleaning up the multi-generational database called a body-mind unit and making of it a clean and open space for incarnation, for us to literally land and express through, that it becomes a vehicle or an instrument of expression for our created essence, our created nature's purpose, rather than, well, you know, the culture beats us over the head and says, go get a job and make money. Become a good commercial servant.
Another hunch of mine right now as I think about this is it is likely no different today than it was in Yahshua's day, that many people would say this is too hard.
This is too hard a thing.
Too much and walk away.
I have to go in. You know, my great-great-great-great-grandfather with my French genes was in Napoleon's army when they marched to Russia at the beginning of winter. And, you know, I forget what the numbers were, something like 250,000 men were marched by Napoleon to attack the Tsar of Russia. They arrived in winter. They were just sorely defeated. And when they returned, there were only about 25,000 men still alive. If my great-great-great-great-grandfather was in that, what was the pain? What was the trauma? If he was one of those who froze to death on the battlefield, how did that impact his wife, his children, his parents, his family system energetically? What is carried there that nobody's resolved, but have played out and played out and played out, making war, wanting to go play soldier again? I mean, I remember back a couple of years ago, Jeannie and I went and saw, I don't even remember what the film was, but it was a really profoundly graphic war movie. And I can remember having to do a lot of breathing and forgiveness work as I was sitting watching it, but coming out and there were two young kids that were kind of like high-fiving each other, like, yeah, man, how cool is that? Like, yeah, we want to go kill people. Well, what genetically has a young person look at something like that graphic insanity and say, yeah, I want to go do that to somebody? What can it be except something that's in, and that's what needs to be addressed and healed. That's what needs to be forgiven. And yet, you know, we live in a culture that brainwashes young men to think it's heroism to do that. In fact, if you go back and you look at the war on drugs, you know, Nixon had Vietnam in mind and he needed killers. Young people were going out being flower children and talking about love. What opened that for them to do? Psychedelic drugs. What did he do? He started a war on drugs. I mean, I forget exactly how the quote goes, but basically it was like, we need to get rid of that. We need people who are willing to kill for us. What was he playing out? And when do we wake up and
see?
Exactly. So when do we wake up and truly function as human beings in mass?
Yeah.
When one by one we do our work, and the physicist Yeshua said, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf, which is the principle of critical mass in physics. My take is when enough people show up in their so-called physical forms as and committed to the presence of love, that will create a critical mass, that will create an energy, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. The whole of humanity is going to change as a result of that. Nixon put a block in that with his war on drugs. No, we've got to stop this love conversation. We need killers. And of course, it's a big money industry. Billions upon billions. And we're down to the last few seconds.
Oh my. Thank you, Michael.
Hey, honored and delighted, sir. Appreciate your questioning mind and love the interaction. And I'm sure it is a gift to everybody that's listening. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all, too.
All right. Have a blessed one, my friend. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mindshifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.